Man, Green Book was really good, but it just made me hungry.
I know. He just ate so much during that film, and you know, by the end of it, I was pretty stuffed as well.
Yeah, but we are moving on to something a bit more exciting this week, aren't we?
Yes, we are. It may not have as great a soundtrack as Green Book did, but by golly, it was definitely as entertaining.
I don't know about that, but grab your popcorn. Welcome to Grab Your Popcorn. I am your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me is, of course, David Kalisa.
Hello again, everybody.
We also have a special friend in the room, but he's not mic'd up, so he's just going to sit there silently.
He's observing.
Either way, it's good to see you, Sean. I just start talking to him without a mic on. It'll be fantastic.
He's a deaf mute.
No, just an old friend we brought just to check things out. But yes, so we are doing Captain Marvel today because why not? I mean, it was basically the biggest film in the last few weeks.
Still going strong, and we are prepping ourselves.
Yes, it's mainly this is the prep episode for Avengers Endgame, which as of the day that we are actually recording this, released the final trailer and went on sale for the tickets and stuff.
But ticket sales crashed websites. Ticket sales are already skyrocketing. Luckily, I got mine bought.
Yep, I do not. I'm going to procrastinate and not buy them.
But that's okay, because it will still be going strong. And luckily, the Marvel Universe fans are very loyal and should keep spoilers off the internet.
Yeah.
Up until now, you see it.
Now, did you just buy them for a theater that's like general admission where you just show up, or did you actually like buy it from a theater where you get to pick out your seats?
Oh, no. We are going to see it on the brand new DXL screen up in O'Fallon and the fancy new seats. And so I'm going to be able to see Thor's hands really well.
Nice.
Yeah.
I will probably try and go see it over in St. Louis at the Esquire, which is one of my all-time favorite theaters.
We're prepping ourselves. We both went and saw this, and how could we not? It's got an all-star cast, yes, as per most Marvel movies do nowadays, and gives us a little bit of filler for what left us at the end of Infinity War.
Yeah,
and gave us some answers, which we'll go over. We'll try not to spoil too much since it is still very hot in the box office.
Yes.
And, we're going to have some fun with this one, I think.
But let's go ahead and go over the basic plot points.
Okay.
The movie starts out with Carol, who is not Carol. She is, I forgot her other name that they were calling her at the time, but
Something ridiculous. Yeah, I didn't like it.
Her alien name, whatever it happened to be. Either way, she's up there training in the Kree Star Force and just doing her thing. And
alongside Watson.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
it does crack me up that Holmes and Watson are now both in the MCU. So.
Yes. And I mean, I don't know if the writers multiple are smart Holmes enough to. Now. Yes.
Multiple Watsonses too.
Yeah, I know. I hope they all get in a room and the writer just like works the magic.
That would be hilarious if for some weird way they rigged that to where
they were just, all together. They ended up in and the they're same, just like,
wait a second.
You? No.
I know,
you?
No.
No. Wrong universe.
So she's training with them, and then all this other just like bad stuff kind of happens, and she is forced to flee to Earth, and then that's where the real adventure begins.
Yeah, and to be honest, in retrospect with the other MCU movies and everything like that, this one was definitely a little bit harder to follow.
Yeah,
there is definitely a lot of jumping around with stuff, and for good reason. With how things happened and how she actually comes to be.
Yeah,
but I felt it could have been written a little bit better, in my opinion.
It was a little bland in the storyline itself,
and I felt because other movies have jumped around too, in the universe, but I felt this one was just a little bit too choppy.
Yeah,
and that's just in my opinion, of course, but I felt it was a little bit too choppy, and some revisions could have been made.
Yes.
But overall, by the end of it, it did wrap up rather well.
I thought so too. I thought that there weren't a lot of like plot holes that I could see.
No more than what the average Marvel movie would leave you with anyway. Yeah.
There are so since we're not really going to get into a lot of the plot though, I did want to comment on just a couple of things. Basically some of the outlying aspects of the movie, including the controversy surrounding Brie Larson's like whole spiel before the movie actually got released, as well as the whole thing with Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
Which will be a little bit fascinating to me. But I did want to cover like some of the cool aspects of the story, though, really just revolve around Brie as Carol Danvers, and of course Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. Like their whole combination together, I thought was really the driving force.
Yeah, they have definitely become a really unique duo over the last few years. This is, if I remember hearing correctly, their third movie together.
Yes.
Endgame will be their fourth, obviously. They have developed quite a good friendship together, so they got really good chemistry on and off screen.
Yes.
And that transferred really well to their characters that they portrayed. I brought this up to you whenever Captain Marvel released their preview and whatnot, and I still feel very strongly about this, that the writers missed a very great opportunity to pull a great comic book stunt and change the race of Nick Fury back to white. And, you know, if they would have just gotten, like, you know, somebody like, his name eludes me right now, like Dennis Quaid. You know, like somebody like him, and have him be Nick Fury, and just everyone just would watch the forums blow up with like, what the fuck is going on here? Where is Samuel L. Jackson? And especially if they would have gotten Jackson to still be in the film, but just as a different, like weird, like sub character, just as like a cameo, like he's there. Why is it? What is going on? But you know, that's just, you know, me going a little bit, you know, further into detail with, you know, the different stories that there are, you know, with Nick Fury and whatnot. Yeah. And I just felt that would have been really cool just to do for the one movie that takes place that far back. And it's like, that would have been cool.
The cool thing for me is that Nick Fury actually, he provides most of the comic relief in the film.
Oh, between him and the cat.
And the cat, yeah. Which if most of you don't know, the cat in the movie is mostly CGI, but the real cats that they did use for certain shots, there was like four of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, the cat is actually one of the more entertaining aspects of the movie, especially because it's named Goose, of course, after Top Gun, which does crack me up since Top Gun is like my all-time favorite movie. So,
back on track here.
Yes.
So, you know, some of the key points. So she crash lands on Earth and basically has to figure out, you know, what's going on Earth and how to keep the Skrulls from invading said planet and taking it over. And so in that, you know, opening scene, she crashes through my old stomping ground Blockbuster.
Yeah.
And, you know, demolishes it. And, you know, she gets spooked and she shoots a True Lies cutout, which that made me mad a little bit. You know, it's like it happened so quick. But if you're a fan of the film, you definitely catch it. You definitely know what the hell that was.
So here's actually one of the things. So, I mean, in the movie, before the movie came out, there was all this talk about, you know, radical feminism and stuff like that throughout the movie. I honestly believe that that might have been one of the only ones that was deliberately thrown in there to be like, you know, oh, here's Brie Larson as Carol Danvers. Like, she's awesome, super powerful soldier. And who does she shoot?
She's
like the most macho dude in film.
Yeah, she blows like Arnold's head off of the
That's where I was cutout. Like,
I was like, a clean headshot. Like, there's nothing left. You know?
I
completely eviscerated.
That was the only time where I was just like, okay, they deliberately did that one to be like, you know.
Because it could have,
here's the
it
was big a guy big that
cutout,
she's,
you yeah, know.
It's like, here's the big guy that she's blowing. It's like, and she it's deliberately just him. Jamie Lee Curtis is just fine in the cutout. So
right. Well, she's fine all around. So anyway,
that was one of the only ones though, that I actually really noticed.
So it definitely goes on right from there. You have to figure out, you know, who is Skrull, who is not, because Skrulls are notorious for shape shifting and taking on you know, whatever being that they are around.
Yes.
So that's how they infiltrate planets. And that's where also a lot of the film's humor comes from, is, you know, people that you find out are or are not Skrulls and how they figure it out and everything. And, basically their way of figuring out is going through a line of questioning and asking questions that are so personal, a Skrull would not know.
Yeah.
So that definitely creates a lot of good comedic relief and a lot of good setup for scenes as they progress through. And through all this, you're all Brie Larson, Captain Marvel, she's trying to figure out exactly what her past is because she is having flashbacks and dreams of stuff going on.
Sorry.
This is weird. I don't like somebody watching me from behind.
Sorry, we if you can't tell from the way we sound, we are in the brand new studios of Lineup Media, and we now have like a separate control room, and some people keep coming in and out and having some fun at our expense.
So. We're gonna need to put up a curtain, otherwise they're gonna get a show, and I expect tip at the end.
Yeah, we'll just rotate. I'll sit over there. You can sit over here next time.
Right, that's cool because I'll make them uncomfortable if they won't interrupt us.
All of a sudden, people just pop around the corner, and it's just not something they want to see.
Or maybe they do. Anyway, so we're going back into the Skrulls here.
So that's what we do. Here's my weird side note for this. Okay, and it left me kind of confused because I was originally thinking that the Chitauri, which is the force that invaded New York, you know, back in Avengers, like I thought that they were the Skrulls. And the reason why they used Chitauri instead of Skrulls then was because at the time Fox had control of the name Skrull, and there was that whole issue. So I was a little bit confused because I was like, wait, so are the Skrulls like a completely separate group and blah, 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 blah. Essentially what it boils down to is that Marvel actually, Disney owning Marvel actually ended up using the Chitauri as sort of just a generic alien force.
Gotcha.
And then the Skrulls they used as the actual Skrulls. But in the Ultimate Universe, the Chitauri are basically the Skrulls, just they look demonic as opposed to the Skrulls.
So it's kind of like orcs and Uruk-hai. If you don't know the difference, you know, it's going to confuse you. But, you know, ultimately they kind of come from the same, family tree.
And in some of the comic book ones, the Chitauri are basically the Skrulls. They're shapeshifters and they do all the exact same stuff. They're just called the Chitauri as opposed to the Skrulls.
That might be one of those scenes where ignorance is going to be kind of bliss for some of the viewers. Cause if they don't know that, then it's kind of business as usual. Cause I didn't know that. And I just took them as two separate races and it made sense to me.
Yeah.
And but the more,
and that's now what they are.
That's one of the, that's so, but in your sense, the more you knew, the more confused you were.
Yeah.
So.
That's really what happened when I was watching that. And I hadn't done any research behind it.
Yeah. Well, you know,
yeah.
It is what it is.
But let's actually lead to one other thing. And this is kind of a little, another, not tangent, because it's a major part of the movie, in my opinion. And the first two things. One, the Marvel intro.
Oh, my God.
All Stan Lee cameos.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I am 30 years old, and that brought tears to my eyes.
So that's the first thing. Normally when they do the Marvel intro, they do all the different characters. And this one, they just did Stan.
And, they either do characters or in some of them, they do like comic strips. Like the ones, it was comic strips based on like that movie. But yeah, it was every cameo from all of his movies and whatnot. And it was done marvelously.
Yes. And then much, much later on, we get to probably one of the best cameos that he had ever done.
Oh, and on the subway?
On the subway.
Yeah.
It was on the train, right?
Train, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, train, it was L-track, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And and so he is, Captain Marvel is walking down the aisle looking for the Skrull, she passes by Stan Lee reading the script to Mallrats. And him practicing his line in the movie that he says to Bodie. What is it, Bodie or is it Brody?
Brody. Brody.
That's right. I'm getting confused on my surfing movie, apparently. So it's what the line that he says to Brody. And it is such a great moment because there are a couple of different aspects. One, it actually shows that like Stan Lee is, you know, the year that the movie is set in was like the year just before he actually did Mallrats.
Yep.
And so like that worked out. It was a very sort of like small human part back before Stan Lee was like the super well-known person that he is now. I mean, like, he was well known, but he wasn't like,
right, because
he
wasn't
as known as he is now.
Because it was pre X-Men cartoon with the time span. That's really what put Marvel into where it is now.
Yes.
Was like that, you know, that was revolutionary for both cartoons mm-hmm. and the Marvel Universe when that debuted on Fox.
Yes.
On Fox cartoons.
Yes. And so there was that. And then on top of that, it also puts Kevin Smith in the MCU,
which is phenomenal, and I'm sure extremely cathartic for him. I know. Yes. I follow him on social media.
Did you see his video that he posted about his reaction to the cameo?
Oh yeah, he cried.
He cried, like, I mean, legit crying,
like bawling, like emotional crying.
Yes.
Like this was, you know, like a child being born emotion.
And it's more so than just him being a fan of him. I mean, he became a friend of his.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah, that was no acquaintance by any means.
No.
But that was somebody close and personal. So as fans of all of this, it was extremely awesome.
Yes.
for just that 30 seconds, you know, all of that happened.
Yeah.
So very cool.
But they look at each other and they have this moment of just like,
Yep. She gives the nod and it's like, oh yeah. Nod of approval.
Exactly. It's like she understands, you know, this is Stan.
And he understands.
Exactly. So that right there though is honestly one of the most is one of the coolest moments in the movie, and also one of the most heartbreaking moments of the movie, because then you're just like, there's only one cameo left.
Yep.
It's like
Endgame.
Yeah. And nobody knows what that cameo is going to be. It's like, other than the people who make the movie.
I think Stan Lee is going to break the internet. I think he's going to break the internet this month.
It is
I'm
quite
calling
possible.
It right now.
If they don't do something like truly great though, I'm going to lose it. Like,
oh, again, and you're not going to be the only one. You know, they got over half a planet worth of hardcore followers.
Yep.
That are just waiting for that day. And you know, they got a lot riding on the line. Stop looking at me.
I'm just saying.
So we'll fast forward a little bit. Some events happen. People get kidnapped and captured, re-escape and everything. And we get to a plot twist of the film. You find out that what you think is going on is not going on, as
yes.
per usual.
Yes.
Without giving away too much and whatnot. But to be honest, in this scene with who actually starts it and carries it through, he became one of my favorite actors of this film.
Mm-hmm.
His name eludes me right now, but I looked it up. He's done a few other things that I have enjoyed him in, but I felt he really nailed his part for this, especially, you know, being an alien makeup for all of it.
Oh, you mean so the leader of the Skrulls?
Yeah.
Ben Mendelsohn.
Yeah. And
they did a smart thing by making Ben Mendelsohn like the person that he was portraying in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
It was was him.
Okay.
Like, so that's what that dude actually looks
okay.
like.
Okay. That's neat.
So I was like, okay, that's a clever way to like get around like having multiple actors doing the exact same
right.
thing. So,
I really enjoyed that scene. They did really well with the emotion in that scene and kind of unveiling, really the process of
yes.
what had gone on and, you know, the ulterior motives of what really was going on. Now, this actually, once this scene happens and, you know, got out on the internet, it actually caused a lot of controversy all the way up to one of the co-creators and, like, illustrators of, like, the Kree and Skrull universe. He went on to say in an interview he did not like the portrayal of that because the Kree and Skrull are both kind of the same in like their ways of taking over and their personalities. So he did not like how the Skrull was portrayed as like an emotional type, nation or
yeah.
Species.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes, that's just not how they were, you know, in the comics. It's not how they are in the stories. You know, but that's, you know, how they're portrayed in the film. And, you know, he in his words, he said it kind of left a bad taste in his mouth.
Mm.
And I can understand that, you know, especially, you know, being a part of, you know, what he is and everything like that. And, you know, but I felt it kind of goes along with the movie. And, you know, when you look at it from a visual point of view and the storyline, you can't have both races be, you know, being the same in that aspect. You have to have one fully be good and one, you know, fully be bad or whatever. But that's not to say that later on, you know, stuff might change, because this is a past event movie. So, you know, some events might transpire and they might actually come full circle with it in Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Kree and Skrull might be working together in some sort of way. We don't know yet. But that was, I felt that was really well done. And that also, of course, leads up to some of the great apex scenes on the at the end of the movie and whatnot on the on the ship that they find in outer space.
Yes. So I gotta say, like, let's just go ahead and like skip straight to the stuff that we actually like. That one of the parts that I really liked about it, I thought the action sequences were very, very well done in this movie, especially the final bit.
I think they were well done, except my wife and I were talking, and when you look at the film as a whole, mm-hmm. and when you look at you know, the group that was with Jude Law's character, like that whole team or whatever,
mm-hmm.
they really weren't that important to the film.
No, they were just like there as soldiers to kind of like.
But without them, they would have had no awesome end scene.
True.
You know, and like, you know, it's like that's really all you were in the film for. I felt that kind of sucks.
There were a couple of reasons why I think that they needed to be there. The first one being that in the very beginning, they established that this is an elite group of the people that go out and hunt down like Skrulls.
Right. Yeah. These are like Kree warriors.
Yes. And like the elite of the elite. Like, these aren't just your standard soldiers. These are the best soldiers. They get special missions. These are the SEAL Team 6 of Kree. Like, and they go out and they fight against these Skrulls, and like they, you know, set up a trap for them, and they make the Skrulls seem dangerous because of how powerful that team is, than having to take on a group of Skrulls and then like all sorts of stuff.
Right.
Like, so that's one of the reasons why they needed to do that. Cause it's a classic setup. It's like, how do you establish that this other person is more powerful? You have them take down the most powerful person that is established in the movie.
Okay. Fair enough.
So it's like, how do you establish Thanos as the biggest, you know, hardcore mofo in the universe?
You have him beat the Hulk. Yeah.
It's like, you have him beat Thor and the Hulk in the first minute. And then you, like, that's how you establish that this dude is more powerful than anything else that you can throw at him.
Okay. True. True.
Yeah.
I can see it. It still kind of left a little feeling with me, because it's like, you're there.
They were basically throwaway characters, though. I mean, they could have been practically anybody and it would have been just fine.
Very true. So, but nonetheless, though, you know, she gets captured
mm-hmm.
by the Kree. She gets bound and put under whatever little spell thing you want to call that.
Mm-hmm.
And she fully develops her powers in the crescendo.
Yes.
And I felt that was really well done. I felt like the editing and the flow of that whole scene.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. Like, they just had really, really good buildup,
mm-hmm.
and like nothing was really wasted. And they didn't like try to kill it with, you know, any like comedy or whatever like that. Like, it was important enough, and they stuck with it, and breaks down, like you said, just goes into this all out battle scene, and which leads me to this soundtrack for this movie is killer, because not only does it fit with the time.
It's all 90s music, which is stuff I grew up with.
But it's also, obviously, like, majority of the songs are also, like, female lead singers
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that, because, you know, female and pop.
So, yeah, for that big fight scene at the end, it's, you know, it's No Doubt.
Yes.
Which is awesome. So, and then I know they played some, oh, snap, what's that one band? I'm totally blanking.
One band.
Garbage.
Singer.
They did Garbage. They did Hole. They did... a couple of other ones too.
So yeah, like I said, this for, you know, they Thor Ragnarok, I love that soundtrack too. But this one, I love the period pieces they put in. Mm-hmm. And it went really well with all the scenes. I felt that they did their due diligence, making sure, you know, lyrics kind of coincided with what was going on in the film and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see Captain Marvel come to full being, and in this awesome scene, she takes down a spaceship just by flying through it, which looks incredible and awesome, and, you know, makes you wish you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of lays in an Easter egg for a character that pops up on another ship for another Marvel film, and comes back down. So she now knows who she is, what's going on, and everything like that. And
so here's like, okay, I love all this stuff, right? You know, I thought that like these things were like really cool, and how they did all these great fight scenes and the character development and the build up and all that and stuff right now. But that is far less important than the fact that I just read.
Oh yeah?
Yes.
Go for it.
When they're in Louisiana.
Yes.
And Talos, Ben Mendelsohn, yep, comes walking out, and he takes a drink from a cup. That cup was a Big Kahuna cup.
Oh my God. Big Kahuna burger?
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying Tarantino is now part of the MCU?
I'm saying that Pulp Fiction is now part of the MCU.
Man, how did we miss that?
Fury has a twin brother walking around LA killing people.
Man. Well, you know what? You know, Pulp Fiction was actually already part of the MCU before this, though.
Well, if you want to know, Pulp Fiction was actually released under a company that was owned by Disney already. Well, so
that makes sense. But yeah, whenever Fury fakes his own death and you see his tombstone, the scripture quote that's on it is Ezekiel 25:17.
Yeah.
So either they're big fans of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or it's just pure coincidence. But anyway, that is awesome.
Yeah, I just wanted to point that out, that's what I just finally read. But, man, and going back to the Stan Lee cameo, apparently, though, because he was in declining health, he couldn't actually say the line right with, like, a lot of enthusiasm and gusto, right, like he normally could. So you know what they did? They used one of the multiple takes that they took from Mallrats. They used the audio from it.
Wow.
That's even crazier, huh? they used audio from Mallrats to do a cameo for Stan Lee in reading the Mallrats line.
It's like Mallception.
Yeah. I was like, what the crap? That's crazy. All right,
there's a lot of underlying geekdom in this film.
Tons of
and
it.
If you're a fan of any of it, you're going to enjoy this film.
There's a ton of Easter eggs. There's a bunch of interesting like story plots and stuff that they explain, and there's a bunch of stuff that they don't explain, obviously, because they're going to build up to it, or it's just not really necessary to the plot development. But I did. Let's go ahead and actually just get to like the cast of the movie, since you know we don't need to do a long episode about this. You know why? This isn't like deep.
Well, I mean, like we said, we don't want to give away too much. We want you as the audience to be able to enjoy it yourself and create your own opinion.
So
you know, it's only ones that we've seen 1,000 times that we're just going to destroy you on because well we know about it.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and start with the leads. Why not? We got Brie Larson. And of course, Brie Larson is in one of my all-time favorite movies, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, where she plays Scott Pilgrim's ex-girlfriend and is really, really nice.
Oh, yeah. It was really nice.
She's super mean.
How'd she go from really nice to really mean? Well, how does that work?
She plays.
What is she? Two Faces Coin.
She plays the part very, very well.
Oh, okay. So you say she's got good acting?
Yes, she plays Envy Adams. and she. It's really great because actually the song that they do is a metric song and it's very well done, but she acts that part so well. And not to mention Scott Pilgrim is one of my all-time favorite movies.
So I'm gonna bounce around a little bit here.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, so she just did Captain Marvel, of course, completed Avengers Endgame, and then after that she's going to be in a new movie called Just Mercy, which will be released sometime next year.
This is going to show you, though, how much like experience she's going to have under her belt, but also like where she's getting a lot of her like power from, and just experience and everything, knowledge. So she also had a part in a movie called Rampart, so which means she played alongside Woody Harrelson at some point.
Mm-hmm.
21 Jump Street, which means she was alongside comedic geniuses Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
She was in the movie Don John, which means she played alongside or with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. She was also in The Gambler, which means that she has acted with Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm.
And she was also in Trainwreck, which means that she acted alongside Amy Schumer and Bill Hader and John Cena. So she was also in Kong Skull Island. So she, you know, that's where another Samuel Jackson film and Tom Hiddleston and everything like that. So she has been side by side with some humongous names for being as young as she is. So I can only expect great things probably within the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, especially she keeps the ball rolling. She said in multiple interviews that her and Mr. Jackson want to do at least 3 more movies together just because of how well they collaborate and how much they like working together. So
yeah,
that's going to be awesome if they, you know, end up getting paired together in a couple more. I'll definitely be looking forward to seeing those.
All right. Samuel L. Jackson.
Who's that?
We don't really need to talk about Samuel L. Jackson. If you don't know who Samuel L. Jackson is, you you deserve to not exist anymore. All right, so let's move on to Ben Mendelsohn, because Ben Mendelsohn is actually a supremely good actor. Most yes. people will be like, oh, who's that guy? Well, you know, he was obviously in a bunch of different TV shows and movies. Let's see, he was in, oh, God, man, he's going, okay, 1984 is when this dude started acting in a bunch of different TV shows, bunch of TV shows. But now he is, of course, more so well known for playing Orson Krennic in Rogue One, which is really what gave him a big break. But he played a character, the Daggett, in Dark Knight Rises, and he was Sorrento in Ready Player One.
Yep, and he also had a small part in Killing Them Softly, which had Brad Pitt in it.
That is true.
So, you know, he's acted alongside some good people as well. And like I said, I really enjoyed him in this film. I felt he delivered his part really, really well, and you know, with his lines and just his portrayal of his character and everything.
I was happy, though, like, with his characterization, because it could have just been, like, straightforward bad guy.
Right.
But it really wasn't. There was a lot of depth and just creativity done with his character.
And as we've discussed in previous episodes, those end up usually being, you know, some of our favorite characters. Yeah. You know, even if they're minor ones, they, you know, the more depth that you can show and, you know,
yeah,
I mean, on the acting spectrum, you know, the more we're going to talk about you.
All right. Jude Law is up next. And the first thing I ever remember seeing Jude Law in was The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be probably the same answer for a lot of people. That was a huge break. But the one that I remember personally and also liked him the most in was, of course, Enemy at the Gates.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, where he played
Vasily Zaitsev.
Yes. Is still to this day probably like in my top 3 for sniper films. That is just hands
what
down.
What are your other just like picks for sniper movies?
Shooter.
Okay. Mark Wahlberg. Yeah, I'll give you that one. Yeah. What else? What else you got?
I don't know. Talk to me next episode. I'll look some shit up.
If you put sniper on that list, I'm going to be like, okay. I mean, like, I guess. We'll figure it out.
Oh, you know what? Jarhead.
Jarhead, yeah, no, okay. You got that. Yep, okay. Top 3, perfect, good. man.
It's all about the pink mist.
Yes, so Jude Law has been in a ton of stuff, though, including the Sherlock Holmes movies, as we stated before, which actually the next Sherlock Holmes movie is in pre-production right now.
Yes, which is fantastic, because it's been quite a while since Game of Shadows came out.
Yes.
But you knew it was going to be, you know, they ended it on a note.
I thought he also did a very good job as Albus Dumbledore in
Fantastic Beasts.
Yep.
My wife is big fan of those as well, and she loves him in that. And then he also did really well. Oh, what was the other one? I just had it too. Oh, did you ever see the one Side Effects?
Yeah, I did actually.
That was a very good thriller sci-fi film.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
For what it revolved around, and it was good seeing everyone that was in that film nailed that part really well.
All right.
So if you haven't seen that one, definitely keep that in your book.
All right. So Annette Bening, obviously, like, she's been around forever, just doing all sorts of stuff. 1986 is when she started working in Hollywood, and has been going strong pretty much ever since. I mean, like, she's an actress that carries a lot of gravitas.
Oh, yeah. Know, like, especially, and this is probably not going to change for me for a while. My favorite role of hers is still got to be in American Beauty.
Yep, as the wife in American Beauty.
Jesus, I mean, you want to talk about some depth?
Yeah,
you want to talk about some depth?
Brilliant portrayal.
You know, the breakdowns and the mood swings and everything. I mean, like, Jesus Christ, it's no wonder that movie didn't sweep every category. Mm-hmm. You know, at the awards that year that came out, it was just
also great soundtrack to that movie.
Oh, too, God, so. Yes.
Yeah. And then let's go ahead and do one more. Let's do Clark Gray.
Oh, yes. I was really hoping you would. I feel that he has really become like almost like the Rosetta Stone of the MCU, like the unofficial one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just really rounds it out altogether to me. You know, because he can be so serious,
mm-hmm.
you know, with, you know, because he's an agent and whatnot. But like, man, does he deliver some of the best one-liners in any of the movies that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really glad to see, you know, that they brought him back just as a younger version of himself. So you can like really see exactly how he got started with Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything.
Yes.
So Agent Coulson, as what everyone will know him as. He is also quite a busy body these days as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you, of course, you know,
he's well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., obviously.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but he has really taken upon the Agent Coulson part in mm-hmm. like everything. He has done multiple side projects.
Voiceover work as the character.
Yep. Like, I mean, he is Agent Coulson as much as Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're a fan of him at all, he definitely has done quite a few other TV shows. He appeared in 8 episodes of The West Wing, which I'm sure was a huge bump for his career with as popular as that was back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I always forget that he was in the movie Choke.
Yeah.
Which is with Sam Rockwell. It's based off of Chuck Palahniuk's book, who is the author of Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic movie. Crazy, crazy twist ending. Highly suggest seeing that one. You know, he's also got a soft side too. He's, you know, appeared in a couple family films, whatnot, Mr. Popper's Penguins with Jim Carrey and whatnot. It looks like he's still going strong with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
Going through this year and whatnot. He has over 100 episodes under his belt. And looks like he doesn't plan on stopping anytime soon. And who can blame him? I'm sure his paychecks are awesome.
Yep. So just to let you know, also the Rotten Tomatoes score, because before the movie came out, it had very low ratings on everything. And so it forced Rotten Tomatoes to actually change how they rate their movies, that you cannot rank it until the movie has been released now.
Right, because weren't people bogging it down?
Yes.
Basically because of...
And the reason why was because Brie Larson was talking about some stuff before the movie came out, and which leads me to the next point, because Brie Larson is a feminist. She is a proud feminist, and she tries to promote, you know, gender equality wherever she can. I will not fault her ever for trying to push what she believes is the right thing. And I don't think that anybody should necessarily be faulted for that, unless they're really infringing on somebody else's rights anyway, not to get political in here. She was talking about some stuff, and of course a bunch of people came out of the woodwork and were just like, you know, down with feminism, blah, 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 blah. But in reality, I don't think Captain Marvel had like that big of a message when it came to that.
I didn't walk like, out of there thinking like, oh my God, you know, what has Hollywood done to females?
They could have gone real hardcore and like really tried to push the narrative and like really made it like some feminist type propaganda film. But she, I don't know like where the disconnect really came from that, but the movie definitely didn't portray that. And I've asked other people about this too, and they were just like, no, I didn't really notice anything. It's like I said, the True Lies thing, or the Arnold Schwarzenegger was like the only one that I was like, okay, they kind of deliberately threw that one in there.
And I felt that was a tasteful enough jab. That's just like, times have changed. This can happen now. And like, this is a thing, and it's totally acceptable and it's totally awesome. And it was really well done. And I felt that it added a great dynamic and, you know, a great little part to the film.
Yeah. But right now on the tomato meter, they've got it's rated 78% fresh, and the audience score is 60% liked it. And I know that there's a bunch of stuff that knocked that down, but here was kind of the general consensus from the nerds that I know who work here in the office, is that when you rank this movie compared to other Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, they're like, it's in the middle.
Well, that's you know, my wife and I, that's how we ranked it. It was like it was good.
It's good, but it's not brilliant.
Yeah, no, it wasn't like Avengers, oh my God.
Yeah, and it wasn't Iron Man 3 bad, so, you know, there was...
I liked Iron Man 3. I didn't like Iron Man 2.
See, I preferred 2 over 3, but that's just, I don't know. Like, I thought the whole, like, extremist, like, virus thing was just, like, know, whatever. But, you know, they've had some misses in the past with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but even their misses still do great. So it's not like it's really that bad of a thing. I mean, they're not like stumbling like the DC movies on a bunch of stuff. So yeah, everybody across the board was like, it was good, it wasn't great, it wasn't sucky, it was right in the middle, and it did what it was supposed to do, which is get us to the next
movie. Exactly, and I think that's on purpose. That's exactly where they wanted it. They wanted it to be just the filler. They wanted mm-hmm. you to go just to get prepped and amped up for it and whatnot.
Yep.
And I feel, because you think about it, movie took place in 89, correct?
No, it was supposed to take place in the mid-90s.
Mid-90s, 89. Oh, 95. That's because right, it was yeah. the accident happened 6 years ago. Okay. So anyway, so it's been 30 years since Captain Marvel's been to Earth.
Yeah.
That we know of. And it's like, I want to see what she's learned since then. Mm-hmm. Like how she's learned to channel her powers, what new things she's learned to do and everything. Mm-hmm. So that is why I'm super excited. I think that, like I said, I think it was done on purpose. Just so you get a little taste of everything, like her, flying through the ship and destroying it. That was like, oh my God, like she just learned to do that or whatever.
So here's kind of the cool thing about it is, and I believe Kevin Feige has stated that like she is the most powerful person in the MCU that we know of. But the reason why I think that she is that way is because she is more a person of mass destruction. So the Hulk is super strong and he can go and he can basically take on any like one giant thing at a time. Right.
Right.
Like, but for the most part, he's just going to go and like destroy everything around him.
Well, she can go megaton.
Yeah. She can go megaton and like just nuke something completely and just blow it apart. Yeah, she did with the ships with Ronan.
Right.
At the end.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, they gave you just enough to be like, you know, she can do some shit.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think that like, you know, if she were to take a punch from the Hulk, she'd still go flying just like Thor did.
Right.
And because like he is probably physically stronger, but as far as just sheer power level, she's got practically everyone beat. I mean, maybe Thor is on her level with Stormbreaker, but when with Mjolnir, no, she'd mop the floor with him as far as I can tell.
Yep.
But then again, I mean, she was also imbued with power on a cosmic level, similar to how Scarlet Witch was. And so, you know, like Scarlet Witch basically, like, I mean, she did destroy an Infinity Stone, like, in Infinity War. So, I mean, she definitely has the power to be able to blow up something super powerful. So it's like, but, you know, she got dusted anyway. So it's not like we got to worry about her.
So the down and dirty of it, though, is we have a lot to look forward to. This movie is definitely built up the anticipation. Exactly how we wanted it to, and probably exactly how the directors and how the MCU wanted it to. And now we just, you know, are on a, you know, ticking clock waiting for Endgame.
Just a few more weeks.
And it's like, I got a feeling it's going to be emotional. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be epic. And I honestly have no doubt that this could be the number one highest grossing movie of all time.
All time. And it's going to be awesome to be a part of that history.
Yep.
It's going to be awesome to review it.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to it. And I got nothing else on this film except to give my score.
Yeah. What's your score?
I will lead off today. And so as we discussed with where it lands in the universe and whatnot, I give this one like a solid like 6.5.
Yep. That's exactly what I would do.
Yep.
6.5. It's an just entertaining film. It is definitely what they would consider a popcorn flick. but it's not meant to be some deep sort of exposition on stuff. It's you just watch it, watch the action, and have fun.
And because I'm not going to sit down. I'm not going to watch it like I do Captain America. Mm-mm. You know,
no, I will watch Captain America anytime that sucker's on.
I know. Exactly. So, but it was entertaining. Did one, two. Yep. I'm happy I got to see it in theaters and everything like that. And, I'm excited now.
Yeah.
Pumped. Geekdom is, you know, at max level right now. And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. All right. So that's all we got. Remember, folks, you can find us on different social media platforms, but find us on Facebook at the Grab Your Popcorn group. We will love to interact and talk about any random thing, especially if you want to get into nerddom, because we love that crap.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's basically it. Just find us on there. Please share the episode out if you are so inclined to do so. And, you know, maybe subscribe so you get every podcast whenever we actually post it.
And the earlier you get in on this, I mean, we got some more stuff in the works. We have some new toys and equipment that we're going to be able to play here soon.
We got some fun stuff
coming up. So we're going to be branching off and doing some other stuff. And you'll actually get to see what the hell we look like.
Yeah.
And you get to put a face on the name, and it's going to be awesome. We're looking forward to it. Thank you again for listening in, and until next time, grab your popcorn.